Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life. In this episode, Ilona sits down with Paul Michael of Peter Michael Winery.
And there's four single vineyards up there, making four Chardonnay single vineyards up there, all next to each other. And so you've got La Carrière Quarry, Bellecote, which means a beautiful slope, opposite at the same level. And this is at about 1,400 feet, I think we are at Bellecote.
Bellecote 1718.
Thank you, okay. So La Carrière starts at 1,400. La Carrière is starting at 1,400 and going up to 1,700. Then you've got Bellecote and Montplaisir. They're kind of on a ridge, a plateau, and they're opposite each other. And so Montplaisir is 100% estate grown today. And then you've got Mabelfi, which is the highest vineyard, going up to 2,000 feet. Mm-hmm. And if you can stand, there's actually one point where you can stand between all those vineyards in one corner. So they're all right next to each other. But all slightly different characters. Some of them got different clones, a different mix of clones in each vineyard. And it's part of our approach is these single vineyards that express different wines, express themselves through these different wines.
So quick sidebar note, every vineyard is named in French. So we have California brand that is using French titles to name the site. Why is that?
It's as I say, it's recognizing our inspiration. It's classical. We want to make a classical label, be recognized as a classical wine.
So it sets your mind up for that.
Yeah.
And of course, Helen Turley. A lot of people think of her as quintessential California winemaker with that point of view. I'm not suggesting that's correct. I'm suggesting that there's been a lot of conversation about it over the past couple decades. Her point of view was decidedly California, opulence, maximizing the fruit, things of that nature, certainly early in her career. What happened early on in terms of the introduction to Helen Turley, and how did she become a winemaker of record?
There you are going beyond my historic knowledge, actually. I met Helen a few times in those early days. I was too busy being a student in Europe. What I believe she did for us was make this wine that, as you say, very expressive of the terroir. Neoclassical winemaking comes to mind in that your classical winemaking underneath the Californian sun.
Yeah.
You want to make it balanced. And that's what she did. She produced a very balanced and elegant Chardonnay. So it's got all the hallmarks of California, but it's balanced and elegant, and everything's in relation, right in relation to the component parts are all balanced. And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, she's without a doubt a huge talent, and revered for very, very valid reasons. And I had the pleasure of tasting some of the wines from your portfolio from the early 80s. And that word came up in my head back then. Of course, there's no way I could validate it because at the time I knew nothing, and I definitely thought that. But as I sit here today, that verticality, I'm not even sure that that's a proper grammar here. I might just made that word up, but I'm sticking to it. This linear nature when there's the backbone and then a lot of other things are happening, and certainly the fruit is very generous and opulent, and I'm very grateful for that because fruit is a very attractive quality in wine, and I always want to experience it, but without structure it falls flat, and your wines have been that way from the very beginning. And that is your core philosophy, isn't it?
Yes, it is. When I'm talking about a classical wine, that's what I'm meaning. I'm talking about a balanced and elegant wine, and a complex wine as well. So now this La Carrière is probably the most classical of what we do. Mm. It's probably not the most European expression of what we do. I hesitate to call it lean because it's not lean compared to the world's wine.
It's not austere.
It's not austere, yeah. But I think in our lineup, it's probably got the most linear profile in it.
Yeah.
So flavor profile and style. And it's actually, in many ways, my favorite of the Chardonnays. Doesn't mean to say there's one's better than the other.
No, you're not allowed to have favorites.
I really enjoy La Carrière. And you know, on the other end of the spectrum, I suppose, you've got Ma Belle Fille,
yeah.
And then you've got the two cuvées we do, which is Cuvée Indigène and Point Rouge,
yeah.
Which are very expressive and rich is a word that comes into mind there. And with Ma Belle Fille, which means my daughter-in-law, by the way, or my beautiful girl,
mm-hmm.
It's also the highest vineyard. It gets the more sun exposure. It might be above the fog line in the morning. It's going to have the early morning sun. And that's adding that extra layer of richness,
right?
Which you might love, or might suit the moment, or La Carrière might suit the moment. It depends what you're eating and how you are.
Absolutely, wine is all about context,
yeah.
Isn't it? Point Rouge is a bit of a unicorn wine, isn't it? I remember chasing it back in the day. There was only a few hundred cases produced, so it's a very special site. Is it still made?
It is made most years, yes. I think historically there might have been one or two vintages where we haven't, but it's a cuvée from a number of the vineyards.
Mm-hmm.
It's a barrel selection, mm-hmm. actually. You're right, I think we make just a few hundred cases each year.
And it's very well worth seeking for those of you that are listening that can get their hands on it. It's a very special blend. It's a story in and out of itself. So,
Indeed. And then Cuvée Indigène,
uh-huh.
is called, the name comes from indigenous cuvée, so indigenous yeast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're doing, first of all, Cuvée Indigène is 100% comes from Montplaisir Vineyard. It's 100% Old Wente clonal selection, mm-hmm. and it's a barrel selection from mm-hmm. that vineyard, effectively. And again, we make a few hundred cases of that.
Very precious.
But the name, I think it came from Helen, and first of all, indigenous cuvées, a Cuvée Indigène,
mm-hmm.
and then Point Rouge, she was placing a red dot on the barrels. In the cellar. So, you know, the certain barrels were selected, red dot was on them, a little red sticky, and that's where Point Rouge, that name comes from too.
Wow, wonderful. So we left off when you were about to start planting your first vines.
Yeah.
Production by fire. Trial by fire, right?
Well, that's right. So that was my brother and I, along with a crew, and in April 83. We were on our Easter break and up there, boots and shovels. And
how was that for you? I mean, for a teenager, was it fun? Were you kind of resentful that you weren't running around playing? Did you relate to the work?
No, it was fun. It was great. It was good. It was good fun. It was good fun. When you're starting a business, a family adventure like that, it's good to be part of it. And I think both of us recognized that at the time. And unfortunately, there's no photographs of us being up there doing it at the time. Mm-hmm. Missed that one before the age of the iPhone. No, I do remember it. Nothing like a bit of teenage work.
Yeah. So, were you bonding with the whole viticultural realm at the time?
So I studied hotel management.
Yeah.
In Lausanne, so I went to the École Hôtelière de Lausanne, Lausanne Hotel School, and that's when I first really started to learn about wine.
In a more formal, structured
way,
yeah.
And along with quite a bit of beer too. and other things that students learn. But yes, and I my appreciation really grew from there, and I graduated in 1990, and then I think I had to do my own things in life. We do other things as a family. We are an entrepreneurial family, and I really got involved with the winery on a regular basis at around 2000, and have been actively working with the board and with the management since those early 2000s.
How do you think all the management training and all those years that you spent learning all aspects of what it's like to run a business, it's impacted your vision of what this brand is?
I think one important part of that is we've always worked as a team. This is really about the people who are here, who come through here, and go on and move on, and some come here and stay. And so, I personally love working with people, and appreciate the huge contribution that everybody brings to what the brand is today, throughout the whole winemaking process, growing it. You know, Javier's been with us, Javier, manager, for 28 years now, I think.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So for me, it's the interaction with people, getting to know them, and everybody moving in the same direction. It's nothing extraordinary. It's just classical management, isn't it? And classical teamwork.
So this was always meant to be a generational project. So at some point, you were going to be involved based upon that philosophy. But was it also a personal decision that you couldn't wait to be here, in a sense? Or how did it materialize?
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
And I was pretty young, so I bonded with the place first.
Okay.
It was quite a few years before this was making wine,
mm-hmm.
and a few more years yet still before it became evident that this was making. We were able to make some special wine here,
mm-hmm.
So it happened gradually. And in many ways, the winery and I have grown up together. In our adult life, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I bonded with the place first. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful, this is for all the family and for many of the people who have been here for 20, 30 years. It is a place of magical memories, first and foremost. As I said, my kids have learned that. I've just arrived here yesterday. We have our 20-year-old son with us as well, and he's busy being a student, and he's going to be working this summer in the UK in a startup business. But I just said to him, well, you can't make it in the summer, but why don't you come here in June and spend 6 days here? It's what I used to do when I was a student, and see it for what it is. It is most of the time when it's not a summer holiday, and it's a place where people live and work and breathe.
Yeah.
I then discovered this world of wine and wanted to get more involved with that. So that's how I found out myself here.
And your dad started a radio station, right?
So my father started. He's done many things in his life.
Right.
He in the early 90s, his involvement with radio came about because some radio frequencies were auctioned off, commercial radio frequencies, and this was going to be the first national radio network as opposed to local commercial radio networks, and they pitched It was an auction, and my father was part of a team which included a few other major partners as well, and won a bid to launch a classical radio station, a national classical radio station. So it became known as Classic FM, and launched in the early 90s. I think his, one of his proud achievements is that there were, at the time, when he was involved, there were 500,000 15-year-olds listening to classical music.
Wow.
On Classic FM in the UK. And I think it was franchised in other parts of the world as well. And it's still there. It's still Classic FM, still broadcasts.
It certainly seems like whatever realm your family members touch, you add a lot of value to it. That's what I'm hearing. And obviously, we're lucky to have you in the wine world. Your portfolio is quite extensive, you know, every wine has its own very distinct persona. And from what I'm learning, it was engineered that way from the get-go. Everything was highly purposeful. Helen Shirley was your original winemaker, and then the second one became, is it Luc Morlet, or was
no,
it
so no. So we've had a great run of winemakers in our time here. So Helen Shirley was with us for a few years, and then she had an assistant winemaker called Mark Aubert.
Oh, of course.
And so Mark then took over.
Mm-hmm.
Around 1992,
mm-hmm.
Just thinking about that, and he was our winemaker until about 1999, I think he would have introduced the Pinot Noir program with Moulin Rouge,
mm-hmm.
At the time, and so we should taste our Pinot Noir in a minute.
Yes.
Whilst we've mentioned that. So Mark was here for a few years as a winemaker. He had an assistant who joined him called Vanessa Wong.
Oh.
Today known as Vanessa Pei.
That's right, that's Pei Vineyards.
Yeah.
Le Moulin Rouge, again at the time, was Pinot Noir was an outlier.
Mm-hmm.
This was way, way, way pre-sideways. Of course, now Pinot Noir is quite a common variety. There's really very hectic pace of planting mm-hmm. all over California and Oregon. So mm-hmm. it's a completely different scene these days. Back then, not so much.
That's right. 1997 was our first vintage of Le Moulin Rouge, named after the nightclub. But a great name for a wine.
Mm-hmm.
And and we still make it. It's the one wine we do make which is not estate grown. So that's coming from the Sony Vineyards in Santa Lucia Highlands.
Exuberant fruit.
Very exuberant fruit, very expressive. Definitely a Californian Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
We decided, okay, if we're going to make this, we need to make these our own grapes, our own uh-huh. vines, estate grown. And so we set about searching for a property to be able to grow Pinot Noir, because whilst we could grow Chardonnay here, we couldn't grow Pinot Noir. And it's just a little too warm here. So we found this property out on the Sonoma coast, the true Sonoma coast, Fort Ross Sea View, AVA as it is now known. It started to become known in those 90s, I guess. We bought it in 1998, I'm going to say, and we planted in 2006, right? And that's just because we had to overcome many, many barriers to entry, mostly in terms of regulation out there. So our first vintage was only in 2009. And it's Well, it's again, it's a very beautiful spot. It's 1 mile in from the Pacific Ocean. The slopes faced inland. They faced east and northeast. And at the bottom of the property is the Gualala, one fork of the Gualala River. And that brings the marine influence indirectly across those vineyards. Mm-hmm. They're incredibly steep again, really steep. And they are at about 1,000 feet. So they're above that fog line. Maybe a little bit, you know, we're quite far south compared to our neighbors on the true Sonoma coast, most of them. So it's got its own microclimate there. And so what goes on with our neighbor across the valley there isn't necessarily what's going on with our vineyards. So that's really profound out there, but makes these elegant. Beautiful, elegant Pinot Noirs, of which you have Mardancers in the glass here. And so this is the northern, in fact, north-northeast. Probably the most feminine in terms of its flavor profile. So elegance, some lovely floral notes, as well as the classic Pinot Noir.
I like that word notes. Profound. And profound doesn't occur very often. You have to go find it. And of course, the recurring theme is that you chose this really challenging site. I would have mm-hmm. to suppose there's some heroic farming going on because it's such a steep slope. And so, again, the pursuit of perfection via things that are challenging.
Yes. Yes. Never do anything if it's easy, as I said earlier. That was definitely the case out there. In Seaview, the Seaview Vineyard, as it's called. My father likes to call it a highway connected by three vineyards.
Wow.
Because we had to connect, we had to build some serious bridges. When I say profound, what I mean is this is valleys, this is steep valleys, bringing, and you've got to connect, you've got to better get yourself around in order to be able to farm them. So you need to produce, you need to build a proper infrastructure.
Right.
And so that was probably the other reason we didn't plant until 2009 as well. We had a lot of prepping to do, a lot of environmental studies to do, mm-hmm. and considerations to take into account. But we were rewarded with three wines that we make out there. So we have Mardancers, which means my dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a story behind that name, and I'll come back to that. Its neighbor is Le Caprice, mm-hmm. which means capricious. Mm-hmm. Pinot Noir is a really capricious grape, very delicate grape, thin-skinned, but can reward beautifully. And then you have Clos du Ciel, which is probably the warmest of the three vineyards, a little bit more, little richer, probably needs a little more time in the bottle, benefits from time. But they're all related. They're all next to each other, rather like the Chardonnays are as well. Mardancers is called Mardancers because my mother was quite a strong personality, and you'd have to be to live with my father all those years. She was saying, you know. When am I going to get recognized in this program? When am I going to have a bottle named after me? And because Ma Belle Fee was recognizing Emily joining the family, as a daughter-in-law.
Right.
And so we had to find a name and a wine, and along came this wine, which has got this lovely elegance to it. And my parents met in dancing school. So my father was, they grew up in Croydon, which is south London, part of London, my mother went to ballroom dancing classes, and my father went and decided to do judo classes. But he, after one session, he looked across to the ballroom dancing class, and realised he was in the wrong class, and was paired across the hallway, was paired up with mum, and who thought he was a bit too sure of himself, by the way, at the time, to your point earlier. And anyway, they became dancing partners, and the rest is history. And so we found the name, Manasseurs. Dancing Through Life Together. And there's a poem on the back of the bottle.
Gorgeous allegory. Wow.
There's a poem on the back of the bottle as well, so dedicated to my mother. So, as I say, stories and romance and wine, they all go together very nicely. So.
They do. And delicious wine, by the way.
Thank you.
It has uncommon elegance and refinement.
The conclusion of this interview can be found in the next podcast, already available for your download. Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson.